This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day here on your home of the Jets. You can reach us here in studio. You can do so via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. And also, we are welcoming your text messages. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. Gentlemen, I say good morning to you both. Nice to see you on this Saturday morning. That defeat on Thursday night left a lot of people in Winnipeg Jets land quite apoplectic.
Yeah, and I understand that, guys, but we need to take a deep breath here. The Jets are still in first place. I realize the Predators are tied with the Jets, but the Jets still have the tiebreaker. So the Jets are in first place, and they still have the game in hand on Nashville because the Preds played the Pens last night. So it was because of how it happened, and I think it's also because of what we've seen earlier this season against the Sharks, right? It wasn't too long ago.
And the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, you can throw the Wild in there too, Drew, but specifically that Sharks game. I think the game against the Sharks hurt more because of the amount of time that was left in that game. What was it, 5 seconds, 4 seconds? I always forget. It was something like that. It doesn't matter. It was the last 10 seconds of the game, right, guys? So when Joe Pavelski scored there, I mean, you knew that you had at least 1 point in the bag, most likely, in that game. And same thing goes for the Islanders. And, you know, you got to give the Islanders credit, guys, because, you know, we all watched the game. And if anybody was watching that game, they would know that, or at the very least, you could say the Jets were lucky to be up a goal late in that game. I mean, the Islanders peppered, what, 42, 43 shots on Connor Hellebuck? I mean, that was an effort, a really impressive effort by the Islanders, and the Islanders are still playing for, you know, one of the top spots in that Metro division. It's going to be tough for them to catch Washington, but they're still competing with Pittsburgh for it at the very least home ice in the first round, right? So you got to give the Islanders credit. I mean, they were coming off a really demoralizing loss against Columbus, right? It was 5-0 or 4-0. So you knew that the Islanders were going to come into Winnipeg and they were going to be very motivated. And you knew that the Winnipeg Jets were going to be motivated because they had lost to the Stars. So, you know, the Jets come out and they score 13 seconds into the game. You know, Brandon Tanev has 3 points on the first three goals. The Jets are up 3-1. And then, to me, the big turning point in the game was that 5-on-3. I mean, you take a too many men on the ice penalty when you're already down a man. I mean, most teams are going to score on a 5-on-3. And when you're the Islanders and you were already playing well, and I really thought, with the exception of the first maybe 10 minutes of that game, I thought the Islanders were the better team basically from the midway point of the first period on.
Well, you have a game, Ezzy, where the Jets lead by 2 goals on 3 separate occasions, and they absolutely collapse. And it's, you can't really sugarcoat it. And you're right that in the grand scheme of things, the Jets are still atop the Central Division. But the manner in which they lose that game, the manner in which Paul Maurice, I mean, I'm going to say, calls out his team in his post-game comments, Dave, leads me to believe that, I mean, that there is trouble in the Jets world. You don't lose. That was not a game you saw the team lose last year. You have a coach saying our team didn't respect the opponent, didn't respect the game of hockey and how they played. Those aren't the words of a team that's clicking on all cylinders when you have 5 games left in the regular season, Dave.
Yeah, no, I think your point is well made, Drew. I think the issue for me, probably for a lot of people watching, is that it's very hard to judge this team without two of your top defensemen in it. So, and that's going to sound like an excuse, and you're like, you're making excuses for the team, but I mean, like, I'm sorry, how many teams can handle losing Dustin Byfuglien, Josh Morrissey for this line? Byfuglien's been out since February 14th.
Yeah, he's played 5 games since December 29th.
Right, and Morrissey's been out, I can't remember when he went out, but the point is that, you know, to have lost those two guys who have such a significant impact and have an expectation that these guys are going to move up, you know, there's going to be extra demand on Trouba, extra demand on Myers, extra demand on Kulikov, Sherratt, the whole list of them, you know, it's a lot. So, I mean, again, if this team was doing what they've done with Byfuglien and Morrissey in the lineup, then I think that there's a good reason for concern. Now, it's unfortunate for the Jets that, now, while it looks like Dustin Byfuglien, Coach Maurice said yesterday, if he's looking good, feeling good, he'll be back in the lineup tonight.
We'd all expect him to be in the lineup
tonight. So there's a high likelihood that he'll be back in the lineup. And of course, Morrissey, it sounds like, is still probably going to miss the remainder of the regular season, may not be back for until the playoffs. But So it's unfortunate for the Jets that you don't get an opportunity to really kind of get these guys in and get these guys into some games and playing. But I mean, again, it's not like these guys are rookies and don't have any experience. So I think they should fairly seamlessly get in. It's just a function of, you know, getting their body back conditioned to playing. I think if the Jets have Buffalo, if the Jets have Morrissey and they're on this current streak still, you know, then there's a little more cause for concern. The fact that they're in first place without those two players in the lineup, I mean, I think it speaks volumes, to be honest with you.
Right. And there's no doubt that they miss Buff and Morrissey. There's no doubt that, you know, the Jets have benefited from the fact that the Central Division is not as good as it was last year, right, Dave? Mm-hmm, but, mm-hmm. You know, you look at this month so far, and, you know, this is obviously the last game of the month. February was a much worse month, and it's not just the record, but we knew that the Jets had a really tough schedule to end the season, right? And earlier this month, the Jets had, you know, the four wins in a row. They beat the Bruins and the Flames at home, and then they went on the road and they won those games against the Kings and the Ducks, which were just horrible games. But then they followed those two games up with a really bad effort against Vegas, right? So I think what's happened here in the month of March is you've had the highs of, you know, beating Nashville a couple times. You've had the high of beating Carolina handily, right? It was 8-1 in that game. So you beat a team that has a really good shot at making the playoffs, but then you followed that up with, you know, a couple of losses that you really didn't like, namely the one against the Sharks at home, right? The Jets really had that one.
You had the game against the Wild. I mean, that was a game that the Jets, you know, they didn't have control of, but another game where they collapsed in the last 2 minutes. And then obviously Thursday night, they collapsed in the last 2 minutes of the game. And sure, the Islanders were the more desperate of the two teams. I mean, just based on their position in the standings, you can make that argument. But when you're the home team and you have multiple two-goal leads, there's no excuse for just really stopping. They stopped skating really from the 20-minute mark of that game. And you heard Paul Maurice talk about it, and you heard him talk about how, to your point, Ezzie, the turning point was that 5-on-3 where they make a silly play and they turn the puck over in the neutral zone rather than just get it deep, and that's what leads to the too-many-men penalty. And you hear him talk about the respect that a team needs to have. And here's the exact quote. You know, Sean has it up here. Here's Paul Maurice post-game on Thursday night.
Just you're talking about the point where that turned. What did you need to see from your team in order for them to turn it back?
A little bit of respect for the other team. Maybe not them or just the game of hockey, but if you turn that many pucks over, that's what's going to happen.
To me, if you have your head coach talking about that your team has a lack of respect for the game of hockey, a lack of respect for the opponent, those are pretty damning words here at game 78 of the regular season. 77, whatever it might have been.
That was 77, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the fact that the coach is saying, you know, that we don't have respect and that we're not, you know, playing the proper way at this point is it's not an easy thing to flip.
Well,
especially as you're now tied atop the Central Division with the Nashville Predators, and you're either going to finish first or second. St. Louis inexplicably lost last night to the New York Rangers. So you're going to finish first or second. But if you're the Jets fan right now, I don't know how you can have any confidence that this team is going to be able to, like I said, just flip that switch and beat a team like the Dallas Stars, who are playing some pretty good hockey, or the St. Louis Blues, who've been the best team in the NHL since January 1st.
Right, and I know what you're saying, but we know that it doesn't really matter where you are in the standings at this point. I mean, any team can really beat any team, and I realize that, you know, that does sound cliche, but I mean, it happened twice with the Senators, right? The Senators are one of the worst teams in the league. They beat the Jets. And to your point, Drew, the Blues needed that game last night against the Rangers if they actually wanted to have a really good chance. But now that they're 4 points back, mm-hmm. and you've only got four games left, it's going to be really tough. So I agree with you. And you talk about, you know, the Islanders were more desperate, but didn't the Jets have to be more desperate, as you just mentioned, based on the way you played against the Stars?
Yes.
You had to be more desperate in that third period.
No question.
And we, you know, the game was 2 nights ago now, and we're going to, you know, thank God, look forward to the game against the Habs tonight, because I'm quite frankly sick of talking about the game against the Islanders. But I mean, we've all seen the replay now a bunch of times, and we were in the arena. I mean, you just can't let Matt Barzal dangle in your own zone, and you just can't have that defensive coverage.
And you
had the Tanev-Lowry line out there. Mm-hmm. And Brian Little was out there. And I'm not blaming any one of those three players in particular, but your coverage there, I'm talking about the winning goal, the Jordan Eberle goal.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't be that loose in your own zone when the game is about to head to overtime and you really need that 1 point, because that 1 point might be the difference between having home ice in the first two rounds of the playoffs.
Let me ask you this, Dave. When Casey Cizikas scored to tie the game, were you the least bit surprised that Eberle came back and gave the Islanders the winning goal in regulation? Because I was watching at home, and when Casey Cizikas tied it up, a buddy of mine texted me, and he said, you know, can you believe what's happening? And I said, wait till the Islanders score in regulation. I could see it coming. I mean, it was not the least bit of a surprise to me based on how the Jets had been playing, based on the fact that they were just, you know, lazing through the last few minutes of that game, not really skating, not really committed to what I'll call responsible hockey. So when Eberle scored that goal, to the game-winning goal, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I expected to happen.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is horrifying because in the last few years, you never would have seen the Jets collapse like that.
Well, I mean, again, I think Ezzie and I were sitting in the press box, and I remember watching the play kind of form in the neutral zone, and Tyler Myers had the puck, and I watched him go in deep, and I remember kind of looking at Ez going, why is he, like, this is kind of, it's a very aggressive play with the game tied. You don't really care if you get extra, if you go, like, at this point, like, I don't know, remember which one of you guys said it, but you just get the point, and then you worry about trying to get that second point, but you at least get that point, you know, because that's, like you said, 3-2 goal leads, that's pretty demoralizing to lose this game, although I agree with Ezzie, that the Islanders were the better team over 60 minutes, but I was really shocked. I thought to myself, like, if you're the coach, you got to kind of coach these guys and indicate, like, look, guys, like, well, let's play a little more conservative. Let's take back the reins a little bit. Because to me, I remember just watching the play unfold and I thought to myself, like, this is a very aggressive approach, attack with the game tied and this late in the game. And of course, we saw what happened. The Islanders turned it around in 33 seconds after they tied it. They got the game winning goal. So, I mean, you know, it's interesting because previously I think I wouldn't have thought that this Jets team would have allowed that to happen, to your point. But again,
past month has shown it to be a regular
occurrence. Again, like I said, you know, you throw Buffalo and Morrissey out there as opposed to Myers and Kulikov. I think a lot of Jets fans are a lot more confident at 4-3 or 4-all than they are with Myers and Kulikov. That's kind of what it comes down to. So again, you know, it's easy to judge this team. You have to judge this team based on what's in front of you,
right,
what's on the ice. That's what we're obviously doing. But I think, you know, you want to judge it by the whole of it, by the entire team. And I think with Buffalo and Morrissey back in the lineup, I suspect that's a different result. That's all I'm saying.
And when we come back, we'll talk about the impact of Dustin Byfuglien's return to the Winnipeg Jets lineup. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
You can do as much as any one player can do to your lineup, right? It won't, we're 8-6 in this month against really good heavy teams and competition and travel, so we've won games without him. But he is a strong defender. You know, he's our, believe it or not, he's our best penalty killing defenseman. And he moves the puck and he's a physical force and he's important to us.
Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about Dustin Byfuglien and the impact that he has on the Winnipeg Jets team and the Winnipeg Jets blue line. We expect, barring something quite unforeseen, Byfuglien to return to the Jets lineup tonight against the Montreal Canadiens.
He wants to make a bet that in the first minute of tonight's game,
no question,
that Buff is going to lay out one of those smallish forwards of the Montreal Canadiens, like I love Max Domi, you know, Thomas Tatar is having a great season, but I feel like Buff is so hungry. He has been waiting on the sidelines for well over a month now, and he is ready to come back, boys.
There's no question that he is going to make an impact, as he always does. I mean, maybe he'll pick up two Canadiens forwards and twirl them on his finger like he's a Harlem Globetrotter twirling around a basketball. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the Habs tonight, shortly after 6 p.m. puck drop. You can hear the game on this fine radio station.
There's always something special about when the Montreal Canadiens are in town on a Saturday night.
Sure.
Well, and then, of course, you've got Bob Cole tonight, you know, calling his last ever game in Winnipeg, second last ever game, because Toronto-Montreal next weekend is going to be his last game. But,
oh, baby,
you know, there's going to be a certain buzz. There always is. But you have the Habs fighting for their playoff lives, and then you have the Jets, who right now still are in tough to win the Central Division. So
it's going to be a great atmosphere. It should be a great atmosphere, at least. You're right, absolutely right. Saturday nights just count for, they mean a little bit more as you get a little bit closer to the end of the regular season. This segment of the show, I should mention, is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So let's talk about the impact of Dustin Byfuglien. If Byfuglien's in the lineup, the collapses that we've seen from the Winnipeg Jets, and we talked about it sort of in brief last segment, do you think those collapses happen? Do you think Dustin Byfuglien's presence can do a lot to just get to make sure the Jets are right on the ice and how they're playing? They don't have the sag that we have seen from the team over the last, you know, number of games. Just his ability to sort of control the play and set the tone. Do you think that's something the Jets have been missing, particularly from their back end?
Yeah, I mean, I went over it in the last segment, Drew. To me, there's no question in my mind that without Dustin Byfuglien, this is a vastly different team. I don't think that's a leap to say. I think most people would agree with that statement. And I think you just can't replace a player like Dustin Byfuglien. Like Coach Maurice talked about it, about how unique a player he is and what he brings to this lineup. And, you know, whether it's just, you know, we talk about what Matt Hendricks does in terms of lightening the mood, but obviously a guy like Dustin Byfuglien, he just brings a different energy. And whether it's physical energy on the ice, whether it's his ability with the puck, you know, whether it's his ability to break up plays, whether it's his ability to make forwards who are, you know, in on a forecheck be aware that they're going to feel some pain when they see Dustin Byfuglien in a corner. There's a lot of things that Dustin Byfuglien brings to each and every single game that you just don't replace with Dmitry Kulikov or Tyler Myers or anybody on this Jets team. So to me, you know, and again, Josh Morrissey is absolutely a key piece to this puzzle for the Winnipeg Jets. But to me, Dustin Byfuglien is just that and more. So to me, I really think that you need to have him in your lineup, and it's just going to change the whole dynamic. So to answer your question, yeah, I think he does change that the way we saw that result, because again, you don't have Kulikov and Myers. You have Byfuglien, maybe Byfuglien and Trouba, you have Byfuglien
and maybe more. And maybe Matt Barzal isn't coming through the center of the ice trying to dipsy doodle as, you know, fearlessly as he was able to do so if he knows that Byfuglien is there to potentially lay out a hit. The guys who are on the ice during that goal, all due respect to them, are not what you would describe as particularly physical players. Right. They're not particularly physically threatening, at least the defenseman in that instance, is he?
Yeah, absolutely. If Byf is on the ice, maybe Barzal thinks twice about, you know, that he's taking. Yeah. But you know, when you're talking about Byf, there's not much more I can add to what Dave said. I mean, we've watched Byf now for 8 years. I mean, we've watched him in the NHL for over a decade now. I mean, he came into the league with the Hawks and he got his cup in 2010. I mean, he has been, you know, he is the power defenseman. He is the quintessential, you know, power defenseman, and he obviously spent a little bit of time with Chicago as a forward, but I mean, he has the ability to impact games for the Jets like no other player, and really no other player in the entire league. I mean, Byf is the Jets' best offensive defenseman. I realize Jacob Trouba is having a career year this year, but you know, Byf was nearly a point per game, you know, even though he's only played, you know, 37 games this year, but you know, you're expecting Byf every year to be around 50 or 60 points. But you know, to answer the second part of your question, Drew, when you're talking about, you know, Byf, he's not going to be able to erase all of the deficiencies that we've seen from the Jets. I mean, he has the ability to make the Jets better because he's an all-star caliber player. But the Jets have to be sharper defensively. And I think that's what is maybe the most perplexing about this Jets team, because I still think this Jets team is, you know, a top five, top 10 defensive team in the league. I really do. I realize that.
Despite the fact they're not really playing like that.
Well, and I realize some of the advanced stats aren't flattering for the Jets when you talk about the shots and the high danger shots and all of that, especially when you're giving up 40 plus shots, which we've seen way too many times this year, in my opinion. But when you're talking about, you know, the commitment to team defense, the reason why I say it's perplexing, boys, is because, you know, the Jets shut out the Predators. The Jets shut out the Ducks. I mean, those were two games in which you would say, okay, you know, this is the Jets of last year, right?
this the Predators one is more impressive because the Ducks, I mean, were mailing the season in, but the Predators, you know, were a desperate team in
that
instance.
But just, you know, the point being, say whatever you want about the Ducks, but under Bob Murray, they've been a lot better.
Sure.
So, I mean, they still have guys, you know, in the lineup. You know, look at Troy Terry had a hat trick the other night. So even though it's the Ducks, they shut out the Ducks, they shut out the Preds. Mm-hmm. So they have the ability to play, you know, a solid 60-minute defensive game. And then you go up against a team like the Islanders who, you know, I don't know if you've looked lately. The Islanders are not an offensive juggernaut. I mean, after Matt Barzal, Anders Lee, Josh Bailey.
Oh, they're towards the bottom of the league in goals for and towards the bottom of the league in goals against.
Right. And you know, no offense to the Islanders, with the exception of four or five players, they're just not a defensive team. They're not that good of an offensive team. That also has to do with the fact John Tavares doesn't play for them. But, you know, Jordan Eberle, for example, you know, he's got 17 goals. He had 25 last year. So, I mean, even a guy like Eberle, who you expected to be around 25, hasn't been as good. But the point is, Buff is going to certainly make the Jets better overall defensively. He's going to make them better offensively. But hockey is not an individual sport. It's when you put five-man groups out there, and that's why it goes back to what we were talking about last segment, guys. I mean, it's not just the defensive coverage by Kulikov and Myers on that game-winning goal. I mean, you had, you know, the Tanev, Lowry, Little line out there. That's your best defensive forward line. Mm-hmm. And those guys just, they fell asleep a little bit.
Well, the whole team, almost after, you know, after Eberle tied it up, or pardon me, Cizikas tied it up, the whole team just sort of had a, you know, they just deflated. And you can't deflate in that instance because the Islanders are feeling great about themselves. And that's why, to me, I mean, Blake Wheeler, in my opinion, is the best player on the Winnipeg Jets. I don't think that's a revolutionary statement that I'm making. But I think Dustin Byfuglien is the emotional bellwether of the team. He is the guy who makes sure that that team doesn't sag in that moment. I know that Wheeler, you know, is vocal in his own way, and Wheeler is driven and he's determined and he wants to be that. But whatever it is that Byfuglien's personality brings, I think he is the one who prevents that demoralized look from ever settling in on the team. And they sort of did look demoralized when the Islanders tied that game. You just sort of felt the team deflate. And I think if Byfuglien's in the lineup, that doesn't happen. And
I agree with you. And that's why, you know, the timing couldn't be better. I mean, the Jets are desperate for a win. I mean, they've already clinched their playoff spot, guys, but
they need a win. It's a team that needs to feel good about
you have home ice on the line the first two rounds. You don't think in the second round, if the Jets go up against the Predators or the Blues, you want that extra game at home? I mean, you definitely want that extra game at home. We know how well the Jets play at home. So make no mistake, this is a huge game, and that's why getting Buff back for this game, you know, the timing couldn't be better.
Well, and Coach Maurice talked about that. He talked about how important, you know, he was asked about rest, the idea of resting guys as the season, you know, like he did last year in game 82. He sat some of his, I think Wheeler sat and maybe Morrissey sat, a few other guys. The point is that he talked about the importance of winning the division and having that, those guys on in the lineup to really give them that opportunity down the stretch to win the division. So to me, you know, right now, Ezzie, to your point, this is a huge game for the Jets. I mean, again, it's not going to make or break them, but, you know, you're playing a team like Montreal who's literally fighting for their playoff lives right now on the outside looking in, even though they're tied in terms of points with Columbus. So they're going to be, you know, that Montreal is going to be bringing it tonight, and you have to match that energy. And again, we may see, especially because let's be realistic. Let's call it what it is. There is no player that brings the fans out of their seats like Dustin Byfuglien. Nobody. There's nobody more beloved in this. Not Mark Scheifele, not Blake Wheeler, not Josh Morrissey, not Jacob Trouba. Nobody is as more beloved player in my mind. Something's going to be a little polarizing, but in my mind, there's nobody who's more beloved by the fans in Manitoba than Dustin Byfuglien. So I really think not only can he bring an energy to his teammates, but I think he may bring an energy to Bell MTS Place.
Sure.
And that could really help the Jets out, obviously, because, you know, I mean, we talk to players and, you know, whether it's in the AHL or in the NHL, they can draw from that. There's no question about it. They can draw from the energy in the building. If the building has
it's a reciprocal effect.
That's right. And so I think that, you know, that really could do a lot in my mind. So we'll see what happens. If he is back in lineup, we're going to learn very soon because Jets Morning Skate gets underway right now.
When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and the Montreal Canadiens. The final home game of the regular season, puck drop shortly after 6 p.m. A game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the Winnipeg Free Press, Jason Bell. Jason, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate you having me back on, guys.
Our pleasure, Jason. Obviously a big game tonight between the Jets and the Canadiens after Thursday night's, for lack of a better term, debacle at the end of that game there where the Jets give up multiple two-goal leads and end up falling in regulation time. Final home game of the regular season. This is a Jets team that's lost two of their last three. They've lost, handily to the Dallas Stars and then demoralizingly to the New York Islanders. From your perspective, this Jets team right now, is this a team that's playing maybe with a lack of confidence?
They're playing with a lack of something, and you wonder if it's a bit of structure. Earlier in the program, I heard you guys talk about that there was a little bit of a lazy approach to that last few minutes. And, it wasn't even so much lazy for me. I mean, it was just total, they were completely out of control. I mean, there seemed to be no structure whatsoever in that last 4 or 5 minutes and two really gross looking goals towards the end to lose a hockey game that certainly the Islanders, you could say had maybe outplayed them. But when you've got a 2-goal lead, like they had when Mark Scheifele scores about 6 minutes in on the power play, I mean, that should have been a bit of a death knell to me. I mean, for the Islanders. And yet they just kept coming and the Jets allowed them to come and the Jets made poor decisions in just about every zone on the ice. And really, as you suggested, guys, did not look like the Winnipeg Jets that we came so accustomed to seeing last year when, one goal ahead, there was this great amount of confidence in the building that they were going to shut it down. And even on the road, I mean, there was never that panic. They talked about never panicking. And if there was ever a time when the Winnipeg Jets were panicking, it was Thursday night against the Islanders. I thought that just so out of character for these guys, at least when you compare them to last year and earlier in the season. But we've seen a little bit of this over the course of the last 7 or 8 games, haven't we?
Jay, the Jets are obviously going to get a big boost tonight with the return of Dustin Byfuglien. He hasn't played since mid-February, and we want to ask you about Buff, but I also wanted to ask you about Connor Hellebuck because I think you would agree that Hellebuck made some pretty key saves on Thursday night against the Islanders, but he still allowed 5 goals, and there were a couple in particular that Hellebuck would definitely like to have back. Is tonight's game maybe a little bit more important for Hellebuck? Weber just reported that Hellebuck is going to get the start tonight, and we know how well Hellebuck responds after letting in more than 4 goals.
I think that he would certainly want 4th goal back. I mean, there was a bit of rebound control towards the end, but he really was under siege a lot of that in key moments of that hockey game, as you guys might agree. I thought he makes an absolutely mammoth save on Jordan Eberle to keep it at 4-3, and then of course it goes for naught because they end up scoring a couple anyway. But the Jets have, to their character this year, they've been giving up a whole lot of goals, and not just from the perimeter. I mean, there's been some in tight chances that he's had to come up real big, and I mean, I think he's played certainly a whole lot better since coming back from the All-Star break than he did before. The numbers bear that out to a point, but I just think he's been more sound. And you're right, he would be hot under the collar after that one the other night. We didn't speak to him post-game at all, and it's no surprise to me that they're going back with him. I mean, the only other option is Eric Comrie, and no disrespect to Eric Comrie, but this is crunch time. And, at this time of year, the Jets last year, they were trying to get themselves ready for the playoffs. And so they ran through a whole lot of wins last year, but now they're facing games where not only are they trying to get their game in order, but these points matter because they want to make sure that they're hosting the Dallas Stars, in the playoffs, and they don't want to be, you know, having to, you know, drop down and play, you know, a different team, or have Nashville get that opportunity, and the Jets are all of a sudden playing St. Louis, or if things really go south, all of a sudden the Jets find themselves going into Nashville to start a series. So these are big points, but again, it's twofold. Big points in the standings, but also to try and get their game in order, because, you know, what are they, 4-3 in the last seven, and, you know, they've certainly been thumped by Vegas. They've lost pretty handily, I thought, to Dallas, and then the Islanders outplayed them, certainly. They won a couple of nothing games in California. They had that great win against Calgary, that great win against Nashville. But I want to see tonight where their best players are their best players. And I don't think we've seen that from the top line lately, guys. You know, Mark Scheifele's got two or three goals in the last six or seven. Blake Wheeler hasn't scored. He set up a couple, but you know, I'd like to see that line really dominate tonight, and because I don't think we've seen that in, you know, probably pushing upwards of about 10 games.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason, of course, is with the Winnipeg Free Press. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN Radio 1290.
You know, Jay, we have to ask you about the return of Dustin Byfuglien, who's expected to come back, make his, you know, first start since February 14th. Obviously, Josh Morrissey was seen at morning skate in a yellow non-contact. So is it too soon to judge? First question is about the impact of Byfuglien, but secondly, is it hard to judge this team without guys like 33 and 44 in that lineup?
Yeah, well, firstly, Dave, to your point, you know, Dustin Byfuglien's impact is obviously huge for this club for a lot of reasons, because he, as you suggested, he can change the game with a big hit. He can change the game with a big rush. He can change the game with a big looming slap shot on a power play and, you know, set up a goal. He is absolutely a dynamic game changer. There's no question. And they haven't had that in their lineup. But going back to that panic comment, I mean, there's a guy that I think when you go back to the 2011, 2012, 2012, 2013 seasons, I mean, we saw a whole lot of the worst of Dustin Byfuglien. And of course, over the last two or three seasons, we've seen him at his absolute finest. And he is a calming presence in his own zone. And you know, you'd never would have thought that when the Jets first arrived here, because he was the cause of such great consternation with his play. But, you know, he is their best penalty killer. There's no question. You know, when they need a guy to get some puck possession, win a battle down low and move the puck up the ice, he's the guy. So there's a whole lot of reasons how he impacts a game. And you're right. I mean, to, you know, Dmitry Kulikov and Tyler Myers, you know, those were terrible shifts towards the end of the hockey game, but they wouldn't have been on the ice and wouldn't have been in that position if Dustin Byfuglien was there. So, and of course with Josh Morrissey, it's twofold, because, you know, the absence of Josh Morrissey has been tough. And I don't want to take anything away from what Nathan Boileau has done with Jacob Trouba, but it's not the shutdown defensive pairing that we've come to know with Trouba and number 44 back there. So, you know, these are big blows. And like, I don't know if the club has used that as an excuse. I mean, certainly there's mention here or there. The reality is, if you take your top two defensemen off any team in the National Hockey League that's making a push for the playoffs, it's going to have an impact. And I think they've gotten pretty good mileage out of Sammy Niku and, again, Nathan Boileau. And Ben Sherratt has elevated his game. And Jacob Trouba, man, I mean, there's a guy who is starting to look exactly like the type of player that he and his camp has always said he was going to be, that quarterback type guy that can play huge minutes and probably is a number one or a number two defenseman on a whole lot of National Hockey League teams. And they have relied so heavily on Jacob Trouba over the course of these last 6 weeks or so. So to answer your question in a real long-winded way, Dave, yeah, I mean, having 33 back is huge. And, you know, that injury is one of those kind where you just hope that he doesn't tweak it again. Certainly the organization hopes that, because if it is that high ankle sprain, those things take so long to really become right. So we'll see what kind of impact he has tonight in what I think is a real must win. Again, not just for the 2 points, but just to kind of settle things within the organization and within the fan base.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. And Jason, you mentioned about just settling the organization and settling the fan base. And, you know, I can't help but go back to Thursday night and Paul Maurice's comments post-game about the Jets' lack of respect, the lack of respect they had for the opponent and the lack of respect they had for the game of hockey. To me, those are pretty damning words from the head coach, especially at game number 77 of the regular season. What did you think of Paul Maurice's post-game comments?
Well, it was sort of out of character, I thought, because he really hasn't. He's not a coach that comes down publicly you know, against his team. I mean, he'll say that we didn't have our feet moving and, you know, our bench wasn't right and those types of comments, but he doesn't really come hard at, never would ever denigrate the effort and wouldn't really flag them as far as what he said. I mean, just not believing that an opponent like the Islanders could match up with you. And that's kind of what he was saying to me. It was a short but not so sweet press conference, but the sound bites were certainly there. And I just think it was maybe I think he felt maybe the timing was right to come down a little harder than we're used to hearing. But, you know, he has a point. You know, the Jets, they took their foot off the gas so many times through the course of that hockey game and did things, you know, loosely that, are, you know, are going to kill you against upper echelon teams. And, you know, whether we think so or not about the New York Islanders, this is not a team that has a whole lot of names on it, but they grind you. And they've got a whole lot of points for a reason, and they're seventh or eighth in the entire 31-team National Hockey League. So you can't afford to, not so much disrespect them, but just to take some shifts off because they'll kill you. And, I mean, they did the same thing against Dallas the other night. You certainly can't take any shifts off against these teams that are certainly going to be a force in the playoffs, and some of these desperate teams like a Montreal tonight that can't afford to lose. So I think Montreal, you know, what Montreal did to Winnipeg, you know, back in Montreal there when they completely skated them into the ground, I think we can expect that from the Canadiens tonight, and the Jets have to have an answer.
No, Jay, we have to ask you about Jack Roslovic, because it looks like Roslovic is going to be in the lineup for the Jets tonight after he was a healthy scratch the last couple of games. Matt Hendricks, of course, you know, replacing him in the lineup. And, you know, we know that Roslovic has struggled offensively. But in a game like tonight, as you mentioned, a must-win game for the Jets against the Habs, who are desperately fighting for their playoff lives. I mean, how important is it for Roslovic to have a big game, not just as far as scoring a goal goes, but just starting to feel a little bit better about his game?
Well, I think it's important for that fourth line to not only just have some zone time, but maybe start chipping in a goal or two. And we saw that in the playoffs last year, guys, if you remember, when a lot of times Jack Roslovic was playing in a fourth line role with Brian Little, and they got some things accomplished, particularly in that Nashville series. And I think it's really important that Jack Roslovic contributes and really uses that speed of his. I mean, you know, God love Matt Hendricks and what he can do for the organization as far as blocking shots and being an inspirational leader. But I mean, you know, his lack of mobility was really, really evident the last couple of games. I think we would all agree. And he's the first one to kind of slam his own speed, you know, kind of off the cuff remark. So, but it is time for Jack Roslovic to get back in the lineup in that fourth line you know, maybe create some chances, which he hasn't done. And I'm sure that his camp and his family and himself have not been particularly thrilled with maybe the way he's been utilized this year. But it would be hard to have an argument that he deserved a whole lot more than he's got. I really think he's taken a bit of a step back this year, and it's not just opportunity. And this is a real good time of year for a kid who's got loads of talent, who's got great hockey IQ, and he's got great wheels to make an impact on that fourth line with right now it looks like Andrew Kopp and Matthew Perreault. And, you know, there's a part of me and a part of, a faction of maybe you guys too that still believes that TLC line is going to get put back together, and then you'll maybe see a Brian Little drop to a fourth line role, but not a traditional fourth line role. I mean, get more minutes, especially when a team needs a goal. And the Jets could use some more scoring right now. So Jack Roslovic, a Jack Roslovic that contributes soundly defensively, but also maybe starts to create some offense, would certainly help in that regard.
You know, Jay, do we get any sort of indication from the coach as to why Nikolaj Ehlers was taken off that top line? And we know he didn't take the morning skate, so perhaps he was not feeling well. But was there any sort of indication from Coach Maurice as to why he removed Nikolaj Ehlers from that top line?
It didn't come up post game, and I have to apologize. I wasn't around the team yesterday, but I mean, I think we would all agree Nikolaj Ehlers has been struggling as of late. I mean, the only time that I've really noticed 27 is, you know, when he does have that uncanny ability to gain the zone, and that's all through speed and his ability to go north, south, east, west at a turn. So, but I don't think he's been playing particularly great hockey, and I don't know if they just felt like they needed, they were in a situation where they were up a goal, up a couple of goals, and they wanted to try and maybe clamp down defensively, and that's not necessarily Nikolai Ehlers, the finer points of his game. So they put Andrew Kopp up there at times. Or maybe it was simply the case that he's fighting a flu bug or something, because as you suggested, he was not skating in the morning. He was skating, by all accounts, yesterday, and he was quoted by you guys and others that, so he was available to the media after the skate yesterday, the practice yesterday, so, and presumably is playing a regular contributor tonight. But I think it was a more of a case that his game has not necessarily been where it needs to be, and a Nick Ehlers that isn't playing up to par, you don't want him on the ice when you're trying to protect a lead.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We'll see you at the rink tonight.
Yeah, it'll be a good one tonight, guys. I look forward to it, and I look forward to seeing you. Thanks.
Likewise, Jason. Take care. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Jets' forward lines ahead of tonight's contest against the Montreal Canadiens. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
We've had some really good examples, even in losses this month, of great game. You know, really happy with it. And then we've taken a couple in the teeth here, which we would use then today in answering your first question and in answering your question. We would take that mindset to use that loss and identify the theme of it and make sure we're a hell of a lot better at it tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The Jets and the Canadiens coming up later on tonight here on this fine radio station. The Jets shuffling their forward lines around a little bit. You're going to see Kyle Connor reunited with Scheifele and Wheeler. You're going to see Kevin Hayes between Ehlers and Line A. And then Jack Roslovic gets back into the lineup at the expense of Matt Hendricks. You know, the Jets had some success, you know, and then they obviously have had a bit of a setback when it comes to, you know, they decided that Kyle Connor belongs back up with Scheifele and Wheeler. What are your thoughts on the shuffling of the Jets forward lines entering tonight's final regular season home game?
Makes a lot of sense to me, Drew, because we expected Jack Roslovic to be back in the lineup eventually. I mean, I just don't think you can have Roslovic as a healthy scratch for more than a couple of games. And I think he's been a healthy scratch three times now since the Jets acquired Matt Hendricks. So, you know, in terms of Roslovic, makes a lot of sense that he's going to be back. When the playoffs start, we know that Roslovic is going to be one of the 12 forwards, right? Hendricks is just going to be the odd man out. That's nothing against Matt Hendricks personally. I mean, Roslovic is just a more skilled player. I mean,
how sure of you are that? If you have to put a percentage on that confidence, how confident are you that that's going to be the case?
I'm pretty confident. I mean, I'm not saying that Hendricks doesn't play any games in the playoffs, but when you're talking about that fourth line, I mean, if you're putting out Matthew Perreault, Andrew Kopp, and Jack Roslovic, I almost forgot who I was talking about here, boys. When you're talking about those three players, I mean, that's a pretty solid fourth line. And I'm not saying that if Hendricks is on that line, it's not a solid line. But the issue that I have is that if Matt Hendricks isn't out there on the PK, and he hasn't been, because the Jets have other units out there on the PK, if he's on for 6 or 7 minutes a game at 5-on-5, I would just rather see Roslovic out there. So, I mean, I'm pretty confident that Roslovic will be on the fourth line over Matt Hendricks. But again, I mean, if you're running into some problems and, you know, Paul Maurice needs a little bit of a boost, I mean, you might see Hendricks in the first round. But regardless of that, I mean, the big move is, guys, Kyle Connor back on the top line. And we've talked about Connor all year long, arguably the Jets' most consistent forward, along with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele. And, you know, we talked to Jay Bell about this. I mean, let's be honest here. The top two lines have not been, I would say, at their tip top as of late. And, you know, we know that Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine have had success with Kevin Hayes. So I think you need to get something going here. Paul Maurice has never been afraid to go back to that line blender. But what I would like to see, regardless if, you know, you see Nikolai Ehlers back on the top line, I would like to see these lines stay together for the foreseeable future, right? We know that the Jets have, you know, the four games on the road coming up, and, you know, they are going to be battling for first in the Central. I mean, there always is the chance that St. Louis gets in there, but really it's a two-way race for first in the Central. But we know that Connor can be a driver of a line, and that's why he's going back to that line. And by the way, I do expect, you know, a big game out of the Jets big boys. I mean, I do expect Scheifele and Wheeler to be better. And quite frankly, I expect Kevin Hayes, Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers to be better on that second line.
Scheifele and Wheeler to me, Ezzy, and Dave, I want to get you in here. Scheifele and Wheeler to me haven't been great for the last couple weeks.
They've been struggling. I mean, you look at their offensive totals going back a few weeks, and, you know, they've had their good games, but, you know, they weren't good against Dallas. They weren't good against the Islanders. And, you know, these are the guys that drive the bus offensively. I mean, that's your top line. And, you know, Kyle Connor has been a part of that line for the majority of the year. So that's why I think it makes sense. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, going ahead into the playoffs because that's when it all matters. I really do expect Paul Maurice to stick with Connor on that top line. And that's just quite simply, boys, because that line has been the most successful. I mean, sure, Nick Ehlers over the last 3 years has had some success on that top line as well, but Connor Scheifele Wheeler, that has really been your go-to offensive line for Paul Maurice. So that's why I think you really should expect that line to stay together. Doesn't necessarily mean, you know, it's etched in stone, but you look at kind of the way that the top line has faltered a little bit. You've had Laine up there. You've had Ehlers up there. I mean, it seems like, guys, it was months ago that Laine was on that top line. I mean, That was a line for a couple of weeks there, and it looked like maybe Paul Maurice was going to stick with that line, and they struggled. So you know that Scheifele and Wheeler are not going to be broken up. So for Paul Maurice, you know Kyle Connor is your best option there on the left wing, so it makes a lot of sense, and I really do believe he's going to stick with that, and I expect big things out of that line tonight.
Yeah, and I think, Ezzy, to your point, I think the idea of consistency isn't a bad thing. I think that sometimes he does have a tendency to flip and flop a little bit, and I think, you know, really to see what you've got with these guys, you know, we talk about sample size. I mean, give them an opportunity to play some games together. Obviously, you know, Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler have played some hockey together, but the Hayes line, the Ehlers trio, and then obviously you've got Little now with Lowry and Tanev. So to me, it's, you know, if you're going to, you know, and it's interesting because I went back and I looked at like what the last eight Stanley Cup champions have done in the last 10 games to see if there's been kind of some sort of consistent pattern or whether they've all gone in with, you know, the similar record or if they've, you know, if it's been different. And like, it's interesting because last year the Caps were 8-2. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, the Pens were 4-4-2. You know, the worst team ever were the 2014-15 Hawks. They went in 4-6 in their last 10, obviously went on to win the Stanley Cup championship. So I don't know that
the Jets are 5-5 in their last 10 right now.
Well, they're 2-3 in the last, with 5 games remaining.
Right.
So the point is the Jets can still, you know, put it up a somewhat respectable record with the 5 remaining games. But I really think it'd be interesting to see what this team can do with a consistency throughout. And that's obviously, you know, getting Dustin Byfuglien back, driving those defensemen back down. And, you know, we talked about it in the second segment. There's no question this Jets team can score. They can put up goals, but what becomes a premium in the playoffs? It's defense.
Sure.
So there has to be an overall, and Kyle Connor, as good as Kyle Connor has been, sometimes his defense is lacking. Like, I sometimes watch him come back into the zone, and I think to myself, he doesn't know how to play defense sometimes. So, again, he's got the wheels, he's got the offensive tools, and I'm a big Kyle Connor fan, but the point is that sometimes defensively, he's a little bit lacking, and he needs to pick that up because, again, in the playoffs, goals are not super easy to come by, but you've got to really commit to playing good defense if you want to make it to that Stanley Cup championship and ultimately win it. So collectively as a group, this is a team that needs to commit. And that goes for, you know, pretty much the vast majority. I'm not singling out Kyle Connor. I'm just saying that this is a overall greater commitment to team defense if this team wants to pursue the Cup.
The Jets' opponent tonight is the Montreal Canadiens. They're a desperate team right now on the outside looking in of the Eastern Conference playoff race. When we come back, Mark Dumont of The Athletic joins us to talk about the Habs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. Part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and you can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
To talk about tonight's Jets-Canadians game, we're pleased to be joined by Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com. Mark, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. This is exciting for Montreal. There's meaningful hockey in the last week of the season, so it's been a while.
Meaningful and then some. This is a desperate Montreal Canadiens team after they got shellacked in Columbus to have the Blue Jackets leapfrog them. You know, looking at the Canadiens, looking at the place in the standings, looking at their remaining schedule, you know, they have four games to go, including tonight. What's the what record do the Habs need to go to, in your opinion, to give them confidence that they're going to be a playoff team, keeping in mind that they don't have the tiebreaker right now against either the Hurricanes or the Blue Jackets?
They have to run the board. That's the realistic approach here. You can maybe schedule in an overtime loss in there, but the Canadiens need to get, I'd say, at least 7 of 8 points and probably 8 of 8 to actually make it in. So it's a daunting task right now, especially for such a young team that seems to be losing steam down the stretch here. You know, the Canadiens have been a really good story this year, but we keep getting those reminders that they're not quite there yet. And it's funny because they align fairly well with where the Jets were a few years ago, and people are complaining about speeding up the process, but they're kind of trying to follow the Winnipeg model and just develop your guys, take it slow. And this year was a bit of an aberration. They shouldn't be in the playoffs. So it's frustrating that they might miss because of a bad power play, but at the same time, you look at this Canadiens team and you say they should be in the bottom five of the NHL. So there's encouraging aspects. There are some daunting aspects, like having to run the table. But all in all, it's been a really interesting season for the Canadiens.
Mark, I don't think it's been confirmed yet, but I think we all assume that Carey Price is going to get the start tonight versus the Winnipeg Jets in this huge game. And, you know, Price didn't have his best effort against the Blue Jackets, but I think you'd agree it wasn't the best effort overall by the Habs. And, you know, prior to that, he had a huge game against the Panthers. That was a win that obviously the Habs needed. They need all the wins they can get right now. As you talked about, they probably need 7 of 8 points, in their last games here. But when you talk about Price, I mean, we know that he's one of the best goaltenders in the league, and last year was, you know, a tough year for Price and a tough year for the Habs. But is the only way that the Habs have a shot at actually winning in the first round, regardless of who they end up playing, is if Price, you know, steals a couple of games?
Yes, absolutely. You know, right now there is no backup goaltender in Montreal. Well, here's the thing. There's actually two backup goaltenders in Montreal, but they brought in Charlie Lindgren to essentially give Carey Price practices off, or at least, you know, alleviate the load there, because he's going to play the remaining four games, and he's played essentially 99% of the games in the last couple months. So, you know, with Montreal, it's do or die with Carey Price. And if they make it in, facing the Tampa Bay Lightning, who might be the best team in the last 30 years in the NHL, it all comes down to Carey Price. Now, another important aspect is it comes down to the two veteran defenders the Canadiens have, Jeff Petrie and Shea Weber. As they go, the Canadiens go as well. And when we saw against Columbus, they were playing very poorly. Weber was making rookie mistakes. Jeff Petrie was making terrible passes. And the Blue Jackets just had a ton of quality chances. So, yes, Carey Price is important here. He's the motor that drives the Canadiens, but they got to give him a hand here. And it comes down to guys that are paid very well, that have more experience than 99% of the roster, and they have to play well as, you know, they have to do their part, essentially.
You know, Mark, do you think the team made a mistake by healthy scratching Jesperi Kotkaniemi? I saw your tweet about his numbers and what they've done since he was a healthy scratch. Do you think the team made a mistake in shaking a young player's confidence?
I think it's easy for me to go on Twitter and point to some numbers after the fact. You know, if we look back at it, Patrice Bergeron, in his rookie year, I believe he was scratched several times, way more often than Jesperi Kotkaniemi was. And when it comes down to it, playing in the NHL as an 18-year-old is, you know, it's really, I think we underestimate how stressful it is, how tough it is on their bodies. I mean, just pretending to be an adult in the real world at 18 is already pretty stressful. Doing it in the spotlight in Montreal, that much worse. So I don't think he should have scratched Kotkaniemi at the time. And I maintain that position because he was playing well. But what's happened since then is Jonathan Drouin was added to his line, and that line is now the Canadiens' fourth line. Mm-hmm. So you're having guys like Nate Thompson and Nicolas Delarue play more than guys like Jesperi Kotkaniemi and Jonathan Drouin, and you're wondering why the goals aren't coming. So I don't like criticizing coaches. I think in general they do a pretty darn good job, and it's really easy for us to nitpick. But that one to me, guys, was confusing, because you had an 18-year-old that had all the confidence in the world, and since then we're watching him. He's afraid of making mistakes. So I'm going to have to go against Claude Julien here, and despite the fact that he's forgotten more than I'll ever know about hockey, I don't think that was a good decision.
And Mark Dumont is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Montreal Canadiens tonight shortly after 6 p.m. at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Mark, you mentioned in that answer about Jesperi Kotkaniemi, about Jonathan Drouin. Drouin got two goals against the Winnipeg Jets back on February 7th. Since then, he has one goal in his last well over 20 games. He played a season low of 9 minutes and 57 seconds against the Carolina Hurricanes earlier this week. What's been the reason for Jonathan Drouin's struggles, and how is he handling it in the fishbowl that is the Montreal environment?
Yeah, good question about the reasoning here. You know, if you ask most fans, they'll say he's lazy. That's it. Boom. That's the end of the justification. And I don't like that, because no matter how we perceive a guy on the ice, you can't be lazy and make it to the NHL. You know, you have to give a sustained effort. Even if you're the most talented guy in the world, you don't make it to 60 points in the NHL or close, as Drouin is doing it, by being lazy. But to me, I feel like expectations were the worst thing here for Jonathan Drouin. When he was sold to the Montreal fans, it was a matter of not just you're getting a brand new, amazing first line center, you're getting the next superstar, and you're getting the next French Canadian superstar. There were some veterans, some ambassadors for the Canadians that even started comparing him to some other legends. You know, I won't start naming the names, but these are hockey players that have their names up in the, you know, the Bell Center rafters. And Drouin was getting compared to them before he even played a minute. So to me, what you have to do with Jonathan Drouin is accept that he doesn't know what the defensive zone looks like. He'll get plenty of points.
Is that a problem?
He wouldn't be able to tell you what Carey Price's mask looks like, okay? And that's an issue, absolutely, but it is, and I hate the sentence, it is what it is. He's not going to change. He's not going to become a 200-foot player. He's good offensively. He's incredibly inconsistent, and he produces about the right amount of points for how much he's getting paid. He's never going to become a 200-foot player, guys. And I feel like we focus too much on the bad issues right now. And there are plenty of them for Jonathan Drouin. But at 24, he just turned 24, I feel like the criticism has been a bit too much. But hey, that's what it is. That's what it's like playing hockey in Montreal, right?
Mark, yesterday, Habs head coach Claude Julien mentioned that Paul Byron won't be traveling with the team, so he's not going to play against the Jets tonight. And I think, you know, most hockey fans saw what happened earlier this week. Mackenzie Weegar connected on four or five really good left shots on Paul Byron, and he was knocked down to the ice. And we know that they have a history. And, you know, Paul Byron has had a great year. He's missed some time, obviously, but he's got 15 goals. And, you know, he's been a very consistent player for the Canadiens. I guess a two-part question for you. Do you think Byron gets enough respect for how good of a hockey player he's been over the last, you know, 3 years for the Habs? And is he going to be crucial for the Habs if they do make the playoffs, and you know, whether or not they want to have some success in that first round?
Well, he is very important to the Canadiens, not just because, I mean, he provides one of the best goals to cap hit ratio in the entire NHL. Keep in mind, he's getting paid $1.1 million this year, I believe. So, you know, for $3 million, he's scored almost 60 goals over the last 3 years. That is fantastic value. But what he also does is he provides crazy depth to the Canadiens. So you have Paul Byron on your third line. Even he's played some fourth line this year. That adds another scoring element to a team that needs to have several lines rolling. I mean, the Canadiens lack talent. That's really their biggest issue this year. So Paul Byron adds a huge element to that, a layer of depth. And he's very good on the penalty kill. He creates more scoring chances on the penalty kill than the Canadiens create on the power play. So it will hurt them going forward. He's one of their key players in terms of leadership as well, because, you know, when the chips are down, it's Brendan Gallagher and Paul Byron going at it. The two of the smallest guys in the league are the ones that are really leading the charge. So, you know, it's a bit of an emotional letdown given what happened. And, you know, if you're replacing a guy like Paul Byron with a guy like Nicolas Delarue. No offense to Nicolas, but you're leaving a lot of skill off the table there.
You know, Mark, if you were to fast forward to the end of the season, if the Montreal Canadiens don't make the playoffs, is the fan base in Montreal apoplectic, or are they understanding that this is part of the building process and they're happy that this team challenged for as long as they did?
Yes, is my answer. You'll have a divide, as per usual. I feel like there's two sides building in Montreal. There's one that's saying, hey, things are looking pretty good now, and they are. The Canadians are finally getting some of their prospects are coming into their own, guys like Ryan Poehling, other forwards that have been drafted recently, like Nick Suzuki. They're really starting to play solid hockey. But then there's a side that looks at it and says, this is Marc Bergevin. It's going to be his eighth season at the helm. And they've missed the playoffs, two out of the last 3 years. What's going on here? You know, do we accept that it's been a mediocre rise? And after 8 years, most GMs don't get that opportunity, a third opportunity to reset. So it'll be divided. But I think truthfully, it comes with both. It's disappointing that they didn't make it. But guys, where did we predict the Canadians were going to finish this year? Mm-hmm. I said third or fifth from the bottom. So, you know, I think you have to honestly look at that and say, hey, regardless of everything else in a bubble, this season was probably fairly successful.
Mark Dumont covers the Montreal Canadiens for TheAthletic.com. The Jets and the Canadiens tonight at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Mark, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks, guys. And I wanted to mention, not only are Habs fans rooting against the Jets tonight, they're also rooting for the Predators. So this is like this is a day where Montreal declares war on Winnipeg. This is the one, all right, guys? So it's no more friendliness, all right?
Very good. We'll keep our elbows up and prepare for any barbs that come our way.
Thanks a lot,
okay,
Mark.
But we'll still get you some poutine this summer, all right?
We appreciate that. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, we've got some good poutine here.
Yeah, we'll take some.
No, we're at war. You have terrible poutine. There you go.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a great day.
When we come back, more on the Jets and the Habs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets Game Day, on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Brendan Gallagher races after it, has the puck. Gallagher in front.
TSN's Brian Mudrick on the call. Jonathan Drouin, those are the last two goals he has scored in the NHL back when the Habs really took the Jets back to the woodshed earlier in February, a dominant victory for the Montreal Canadiens over the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets look for revenge tonight in the final regular season home game for the team at home before they head out on the road for four to end the regular season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve and home of the Illegal Curve sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon in the Cordon Village Mall. We've been keeping you updated on March Madness, or the Winnipeg Free Press version of March Madness. Bernstein's is proud to have qualified for the Famished Four, so they're into the Final Four.
Are you two part of the Famished Four? You guys are famished.
I'm always famished. So, yeah, I mean, they have my vote, and I've been voting for them. You can vote for them every day, so we do encourage you to check that out at winnipegfreepress.com and cast your vote for Bernstein's Deli as they're into the Final Four of the Famished Four. Tonight, the Jets and the Montreal Canadiens at Bell MTS Place, the final of 41 home games for the Jets. They have the four more, as I mentioned, on the road. You know, the Habs are a desperate team, and the Jets, you know, are a desperate team in a different way. Obviously, the Habs are fighting tooth and nail just to qualify for the playoffs. That was a bad loss they had in Columbus, but they sit a point out of the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, and the Jets need to remove the stink and remove the stench of the last couple games against Dallas and then again the loss against the Islanders. So I'm expecting a fast, high-energy game, and I don't think the Jets will be as surprised by the speed that the Habs throw at them, because I think that really did surprise them when they met early in February. The Jets weren't prepared to face the Habs and the speed that they bring to the game.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's tons of speed, tons of skill, and obviously, you know, the Habs aren't going to have Paul Byron. We talked to Mark Dumont last segment. I mean, Paul Byron has had back-to-back 20-goal seasons, and he probably would have scored, you know, 20 goals if he was healthy this year. I've always liked his game, and, you know, you look at the Habs' last four games, it's a really tough schedule. You've got the Jets tonight, and then you've got the Lightning, the Caps, and the Leafs.
Yeah, they're done.
I mean...
and they only have four games
and
left.
And you don't have any room for error. Like, the Habs can't win two of their last four games. No. At the very least, they have to win three, well, probably four.
You heard what Mark Dumont said. We asked him that question. He said they need to sweep all four. And I mean, you know, maybe they can sneak in if they get
like an overtime loss.
Yeah, 7 out of 8 points as opposed to 8 out of 8 points.
But when you don't have the game in hand, right? Like not having the game in hand.
And no game in
hand. What I meant is Columbus has the game in hand. So I meant if you don't have the same amount of games, right? It's not really an even playing field because I mean, you've put yourself in a position where you just don't have that room for error, as we talked about. And, you know, I think the Habs have been a great story because, you know, you talk about the New York Islanders, right? And I think we would all agree that the Islanders, if they're not the biggest surprise of the season, they have to be right up there. But if you're talking about, you know, if there's the second tier Dave of surprises, it has to be the Habs because the expectations for this team were just so low. I don't know if we thought that they were going to be as bad as they were last year because I thought they were going to be better. But, you know, they've been right in the thick of the playoff race all year long. Mm-hmm. I mean, Max Domi has been, I think, one of the best stories. He goes from 9 goals last year.
Yeah, terrible year in Arizona.
To 27 goals this year. I mean, he has led the Habs offensively all year. And, you know, Andrew Shaw, another great story. He's got 18 goals. He's a guy that, you know, doesn't seem to be talked about a lot. But when you're talking about the Habs, like, you look at the Habs and you say, okay, this team doesn't have any superstars, right? We know that they've got Carey Price. He's the closest thing they have to a superstar. But you look at their team and you say, okay, well, they don't score a lot of goals. They're not one of the best defensive teams. I mean, they don't have that great of a power play. In fact, they have one of the worst power plays in the entire league. So you say, well, how are they doing that? Well, they're well coached and they're very difficult to play against. I mean, you've got a lot of skill forwards, but you've also got a lot of, I think,
dead last, by the way, in the NHL in power play.
Yeah. Oh no, their power play has been a problem all year long, but
12.3% success rate. That's just horrendous.
Right. And that's, you know, a function of, you know, the players that they have. I just don't think they have, you know, the personnel to have a top power play like, you know, the Lightning or the Jets or the Leafs, but they're a difficult team to play against. And we mentioned Andrew Shaw. I mean, he's that buzzsaw. I mean, he's always going to be in your face, but
Brendan Gallagher too.
Well, Brendan and Max Domi. I mean, Brendan Gallagher and Max Domi, between them, they have 60 goals, but those are also guys that you hate to play against. They're not big players. Yeah. I mean, those are 5'9" forwards, 5'10" forwards, but these are guys that are in your face. I mean, they're Brad Marchand types, right? Mm-hmm. So the Habs have no shortage of guys like that. Paul Byron is another guy that's tough to play against. And, you know, Arturi Letkinen is another guy, and he's not a guy that, you know, you're going to expect to score 30 goals ever, but he's a really underrated forward, in my opinion, for the Habs as well. And Shea Weber's had a nice bounce back season. So even the Habs, the Habs aren't, you know, one of those teams that on a nightly basis you're going to expect to, you know, hammer teams. It's a team that I think has exceeded expectations all year long. And whether or not they make the playoffs this year, I mean, they're trending in the right direction because, yes, Barry Kotkaniemi, who is a surprise third overall pick, I mean, he's been a very impressive rookie. Sure, he's had his, you know, he's had his issues and he's had his games where, you know, he looks like he might not be quite ready for the NHL. But just the fact that he made this team this year is impressive. So it's going to be a tough test for the Jets tonight just because of how desperate the Habs are going to be, but also because just they're just so difficult to play against. And they aren't an easy out against any team.
This is going to be a skating game, Dave. If there ever was a game that is going to be determined by who is the faster of the two teams, this is the game. And we saw it. And I mean, the Jets, that was the knock on them. They skated for about 20 minutes against the Islanders. And then they took their foot off the gas pedal and you don't have to skate. And we've seen that too often this season where the Jets don't feel the need that they need to skate hard and be as fast as possible for 60 minutes. If you're not skating tonight against the Canadians, you're going to lose.
They've already, to your point, Drew, they've already learned and experienced that once with Montreal, right? So the fact of the matter is you can't allow a repeat of that sort of same sort of game against Montreal because you're just going to end up losing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, to lose, if you lose in overtime, you lose in a shootout, whatever, that's not the end of the world because those are like, you know, not 5-on-5.
They're coin flips at that
exactly.
point.
But the point is that this is a game that you, it's not a must win like it is for Montreal, but you need, it set itself up in that manner simply because of the way things have gone this week for the Jets. So I think, you know, the Jets are playing against a team, first of all, not a great road team.
Yeah.
They're 18-17-4 on the road. The other thing, again, we talked about their power play and the Jets PK, which I think is about 23rd. You know, Paul Maurice talked about Dustin Byfuglien and the importance of Dustin Byfuglien, called him his best penalty killer.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to, if they get many opportunities, it may give them a lot of confidence because, again, you're going up against a very poor power play. So it could be a good thing for the Jets to get their PK up and running.
One of the things we like to do on the show is be completely open and honest. So when somebody criticizes us, we have no problems reading that criticism on air. Ezzy, this is a criticism directed at you. You said that Winnipeg had good poutine. Somebody texted in via, you know, on the text line, 1290-90, standard messaging rates do apply. Boys, come on, as a Frenchman, there is mediocre poutine here. Go to Quebec and you'll never hear it, eat it here again. So of course, you know, our hockey criticism or our, you know, criticism of our hockey analysis has gone unannounced so far today, but our poutine recommendations that was just Ezzy's.
No, but the poutine is better in Montreal, but Le Garage, if you've been to Le Garage, the poutine is fantastic there.
Fair enough.
And we're not even paid by Le Garage, so.
Well, you
as he has an individual sponsorship.
You have an
actually.
Individual sponsorship. When we come back, John Mattis of thescore.com is going to join us. Look around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.